Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintec studio. Yeah, Canuck Central on the road again. As today, we are live from the Clayton Public House on 188th Street in Surrey. This is a great spot to watch Thursday night football. We are the home of the Seahawks as well, of course. Seahawks and Niners coming up. Big divisional matchup. Seahawks 3-2, Niners 2-3. Niners kind of need this one, but so do the Seahawks, who just lost two in a row. My Seahawks, of course.
Yeah, this is a great spot to watch it, too, especially where they got the projection TV as well.
Yeah.
And that's where we're situated here before the game. But it's going to be a good one, man. I'm hyped. I'm not even a Seahawks fan nor a Niners fan, but anytime these two teams go head-to-head, it is a fantastic watch.
Except that 6-3 game all those years ago. Maybe I was just thinking about
it. We don't think about that game very much. That's not the one we think about.
Yes, so we are in the Mobile Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Of course, the Clayton, also a great spot to watch your Vancouver Canucks. And that, as always, here on Canucks Central, is where we start today. It's the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The Canucks did practice over at UBC today. A couple of new items there that we'll get to in the Canucks Central roundup. But let's start with last Saturday. Overreactions of some Canucks fans that were listening on the Canucks Central post-game show with you and Bick last night. What I would say is I'm not overreacting to one game, but what I would say is all of the question marks that I had that we've discussed over the last couple of weeks leading into game one of the season, they were all exposed last night. Like, basically all of them took a little bit of heat at one point or another. First and foremost, Artur Shelov's the continued struggles with shots from distance, shots from the point. You know, we see that on a number of the goals. He gets maybe a little too excited at points and overplays his hand and gets caught. Those are things you don't love to see. So if you had a question mark about the goaltending with Demko out and an uncertainty of when Demko's coming back, that raised a bit of a red flag. And maybe the one that is the biggest development of all to come out of game one. The second, D-zone coverages weren't great. They spent a lot of time in the preseason focusing on how we're going to improve our transition. Rick Tocchet even taking some of this blame on his own by saying, maybe I focused a little too much on those types of areas and it ended up, hurting us because we were a little loose in our D-zone coverage. We moved away from our identity a little bit. Third on that, the defense, Forbert and Desharnais, they get touched up. They didn't look good last night. I don't know any other way to say it. There's a reason Desharnais is the seventh defenseman at practice today, and Noah Juulsen looks like he might get in. So if you had question marks, and those were the big ones coming into the season in game one, not that it's something to overreact to because nobody is perfect on game one. They got exposed last night to some level.
If you want to be pessimistic, you could find a lot of big faults in last night's game. At the same time, they had an excellent first period. They also showed a lot of the good things that you want to see from this team and the things that they can do well. That first period, they were absolutely all over the Calgary Flames. They barely gave up anything. They created high-danger chance after high-danger chance. They created off the rush. And defensively, they were more than fine getting the puck out of their own end. And Calgary had nothing in the first. The only chance they had was the giveaway JT Miller had to Anthony Mantha when he scored shorthanded. I mean, that's the only real play that Calgary had in that first period. Outside of that, there wasn't really much that, Shelov's had to face, and the Canucks defensively were strong. After that, they stopped skating. They did. Stopped skating. They let Calgary into the game. Shelov's didn't make enough key saves. He had a tough night. And in terms of what it means in the big picture, I don't think it means too much. I just think it's one game. They didn't play great. They can be a lot better.
Yeah.
I expect them to be better. And hopefully it's the type of early wake-up call you get where you blow a lead against a team that you should be beating that, right, you know, tightens you up right away.
Part of me was like, they might come back and win this thing after JT Miller scored the tying goal and you get to overtime. Who knows what could happen? Maybe you sneak it out in the shootout. All those things very possible. But I'm almost like I think it's better that they end up losing the game. Maybe there is more of the lesson being taught that they do lose the game. Because more than anything else, like, yeah, I know confirmation bias would say if you had questions about Seelovs, they showed up last night. If you had questions about the defense, they showed up last night. If you had questions about how this team was going to be able to mold their defensive play style and add some wrinkles to their offense and it didn't work out, they couldn't mold both of those together. All those confirmation biases showed up. But more than anything, and this is what Tockett mentioned today at the morning skate or at the practice, and a lot of the players mentioned last night, they got too comfortable on a 4-1 lead. And that really is the story of the game. Calgary was like, no, we're going to get our work boots on. We're going to be a hardworking team that probably struggles to get to anywhere close to 500 by the end of the year, but we're going to be hardworking. And the Canucks, they put it in cruise control, playing as if it was going to be easy to ride out that 4-1 win last night.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something I expect to see again. Like, yeah. Honestly, I don't expect this to be the norm, especially with Rick Tocchet as the coach. Well, we heard him kind of talk himself down a bit post-game, and today he was a lot more diplomatic about what he saw and what he expects. Like, I don't expect these things to linger or go across. And honestly, and I see this text here from Pumpkin Spice Boy. Hey, Sat, are you still fired up or what? Because, like,
what'd
last
you get
night,
fired up about?
Well, we had like call after call just going off on Pettersson and people saying they should trade him. He's not worth the money. And you want to criticize his game, that's fine. But his game went into the season, and we're getting people just absolutely melting down. So I wasn't even that upset. I was just more disappointed. I was more disappointed than upset. I mean, this is game one of the season.
Sat, disappointed is like worse than upset.
It is worse. I told people I was disappointed. Like I expected better than what I heard last night. And you're within your rights to criticize any player, criticize anything you saw. That's completely fine. But to absolutely lose and blow a gasket one game into the season. We know this is a marathon, right? We also know that early season hockey can be pretty chaotic. There's a reason why October is usually the highest scoring month. The coach today also confirmed what we talked about last night. You always see the first couple weeks of the season, a lot of high scoring games. Teams are trying to figure out their systems. Guys are trying to get back into rhythm. Some players who didn't play as much, like JT, still knocking off some rust. So there's a lot of factors here early in the season that you can't get too high or too low. And I thought that we were beyond overreacting to one game, especially coming off a successful year. So I was disappointed with the type of reaction we got on the postgame show last night. I expected better. I expect better from a lot of the fan base. And you're allowed to be critical of any player you want. Completely, you are. But if we're on tilt and saying trade this guy, he's worthless, after game one of the season, like, it's too early for this stuff.
It's going to be a long year.
It's too early for this stuff.
If I were to say, like, do you think Rick Tocchet would play Elias Pettersson 23 and a half minutes last night if he didn't think he was all that great? Now, I know Miller had the fight, so, you know, that plays a factor. Pettersson had to double shift for the time that Miller was in the box. But no other Canuck really came, at least forward, even came close to being over 20 minutes last night.
When I rewatched the game too, how do you want to grade the performance? You don't want to give it a B plus or an A. Fine, that's fine, right? But I don't know what people were watching when they said he did nothing last night.
Yeah,
because that was not true. Whether it was defensively creating some scoring chances, trying to stick up for his teammate. People talk about him being emotionless, not doing anything. I mean, he put a glove in Pospisil's face after he hit DeBrusque. So, I mean, like, and he had a couple of moments where he battled for position. He drew a penalty. He dove in a couple times and knocked pucks loose. He kept the puck in the blue line on his second shift of the game on a really nice play. He had a turnover, sure. He had a couple of moments he lost the puck. That absolutely happened. He also set up, like, four scoring chances.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this wasn't a bad Pettersson performance. And for us to lose our mind after that, to me, was just too much. And I think in terms of each individual player, do you want to be overly concerned about anyone that's up to you. The only thing that we've been tracking that has been on a trend in terms of a flaw in the game has been the Shilovs thing with the long distance shots kind of going through and him not being able to see through certain screens. That's the one thing in terms of the game that it's like, okay, this has to really change from an individual basis. The rest of the players, honestly, it's like, hey, the first game of the season. And going back and watching the game, I don't even think Forsberg was nearly as bad as people made him out to be. Desharnais had some moments, sure, but the biggest culprits last night were the Canucks forwards.
Yeah.
Absolutely were the biggest culprits.
Yeah, the forwards not helping out on the breakouts. Desharnais and Forsberg got stuck in their own end a bit. I thought there was times they could have moved the puck quicker, but also, you know, if your forwards aren't giving you an outlet, where are you moving the puck to? And so there is a lot of blame to go around. But the Shilovs won, not that there's a huge red flag there, because Shilovs is still an incredibly talented young goalie. But this is something Edmonton really started to attack last year in the postseason. And it ended up tilting the series to a certain extent in Edmonton's favor. A series that, the Canucks maybe were a little lucky to be up 3-2 in that series to a certain extent. But they were right there with Edmonton for the most part. And once Edmonton really started to hammer home on this flaw in Shilov's game, they ran away with Game 6, and they built an early lead in Game 7 that they were able to ride out over the Canucks. You saw it not a lot in preseason, but you saw it a little bit in preseason starting to play out again. And then last night, it's clear as day. It's part of Calgary's pre-scout and part of Calgary's game plan to get some bodies into his eyes and take shots from the point, trying to pick corners. Not clappers from the point. Like, no, we are being very specific about how we want these shots to be taken and how we're going to set them up before the shot is actually taken.
Well, and there was also there was one save he made. He didn't quite see the puck. It came from the point. There was also a puck that went off the post, which also was a distance shot, too. So there was more than just the goals that was a bit problematic for him. I have confidence in Shilovs that he's going to figure it out. But it's the one thing in his game currently that is being exposed, that has to get fixed. And in terms of the goalie deployment, I think the Lankinen start, which I would assume he's going to start here on Friday, and they're going to probably alternate guys a little bit. I think Lankinen has a chance to be the guy until Demko comes back. And as much as Shilovs, he's talented. And maybe he turns it around and next thing you know, he gets red hot and he gets the lion's share of starts until Demko comes back. But I think people forget how young he is. And people forget that he's still as talented as he is. He's still raw. And there are certain aspects of his game that he can still improve and get better at. And it's hard to hit the NHL and be good at everything right away. Like, it takes time. There are very few goalies that can be excellent right away. They go through some ups and downs, and I think sometimes we might be people get carried away with expectations and projections for goaltenders specifically. And I think that the thought that he was going to step in and seamlessly replace Demko and perhaps even replace Demko as soon as this year and be the guy, maybe he can do that one day. I'm not sure that day is today. And that's, you know, it was a reminder that as talented as he is, there's still areas of his game that he has to improve on. And in terms of Lankinen now, that to me becomes interesting because this is something now through the preseason we've been tracking. If he doesn't shore it up quickly, they can't afford to let him work it out at the NHL level. And I'm not saying they're going to send him down, but Lankinen has a chance here to really get a lot of starts if he plays well.
Ian at UBC, and of course you want to text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You can be a part of the program if you are listening live. We do encourage it. Ian at UBC, can the Canucks abandon the lockdown defense first hockey and still win hockey games? I hear what you're saying, Ian. I disagree with the wording a little bit. I don't think at any point is Rick Tocchet going to abandon the defense first hockey. I think he is a guy and a coach that wants, like most NHL coaches, they want their team to be responsible first, but also be proactive in exploiting other teams' aggressiveness, taking space when it is given to you, and taking opportunities when they are given to you. And that's the evolution in identity that I think Tocchet is trying to implement with this team that like, obviously hasn't gone full go yet. I wouldn't expect it to be, you know, firmly implanted on game one of the season either.
No, and these things, you know, I think take time for them to come together. And that's part of the early part of the season. Like, honestly, you can't get too – this is why I always say the first 20 games of the year, just don't be under 500. Mm-hmm. That's how I kind of view generally the first 20 games. Hey, you want to be better than 500, but 500 is kind of the survival rate. You get to 500, it's like you still have a great chance to be a playoff team and finish the season strong. And if you can be a couple of games or a handful of games over 500, 20 games in, I mean, you're cooking. We saw that last year with this team. It comes down to how do you improve your team game, and do you show signs over that time that you have a sustainable way of playing hockey that's going to be successful? And it's too early for us to say. I think we can say we believe in certain players and the foundation of the team and how they played last year, and we assume they are going to get better. But they have to prove it still. And you can't just assume that you're the same team from last year. There are new faces. There's some changes to the system, as you mentioned, and those changes take a little bit of time. And for you to forge an identity, you have to forge it. You have to do the things you did last year again. You can't just rest on what you did last year. You have to reinforce them. They have to become second nature again. It starts from the beginning, and how willing are you to put that work in from day one? And last night we saw for 20 minutes, didn't see it for the full 60.
Yeah.
We need to see it over the next 15, 20 games here, them bringing it the majority of games. It can't be the full 60 every game. That's just not realistic. But can you do the majority of games? If they do, through 20 games, keep their head above water, they're in great position. I don't worry too much about the record. Just don't be under 500.
Now, you know, there was a lot going on in last night's game. I mean, it was very much October hockey. It was loose. It was teams not having their structure built in really to any level just yet, and that's how you end up with the 6-5 scoreline that we got yesterday. There wasn't a lot of, like, I wouldn't say too many Canucks stood out on any level that were great. JT had great moments. He had bad moments.
Yes. He had a lot of bad turnovers.
Yeah. You know, when JT gets a little loose in his game, he'll make those cross-ice passes that are quite dangerous, high-risk plays, and on a couple of occasions, they ended up going back the other way. The Mantha goal, obviously, and the empty netter that turns into a goal for JT, thanks to Quinn Hughes. But like, there were other moments too. Not to pick on JT or anything, but you know, there were good moments and they were bad, which is kind of what you would expect out of a 6-5 game. But on the new players, I actually really like Jake DeBrusk's game, and this is, you know, a continuation of some of the things we saw in preseason, but I think he is a smarter player than I gave him credit for, not watching the Bruins super closely and watching more tape after the signing this summer and watching him closely here in preseason, then again last night. The assist to Brock's goal, like, great. Really high-level play, high IQ to rotate down there below the goal line and make the quick pass to Brock. But some of the things that he does with Pettersson, staying close to Pettersson, giving him an option to pass to, quick one-touch passes, getting the puck onto Pettersson's stick, knowing he's the guy that should be, you know, be the guy carrying the puck and have the puck on his stick. There was just a lot of little things, positioning, quick short area passes that I really liked in Brust's game.
Yeah, he has some experience, obviously, playing with guys like Pasternak from time to time, has played with Marchand as well. So a player who's very capable of playing a smart game with some talented players. At the same time, he's now playing with a new guy, and he's going to play a bigger role and be more featured than any other time. And to do that, you need to have very high intelligence. And you're right. You saw a lot of really good signs from DeBrusk in that sense. And he has really nice touch, too, really nice hands. I did see a little bit of hesitation from time to time, which I think is completely natural for a new player, a new team, and new line mates at the regular season level. There's a couple times defensively where he kind of got not sure where to go and what to do. Again, that's just part of the natural rotations. And
could possibly be Sprong, too, who's a little bit lost, so you're trying to read off your teammate, and that's becoming a struggle.
Okay, it's quick sidebar. So on the way here, Reach and I were talking, and we were talking about Daniel Sprong, and I was telling Reach, I'm like, you know, sometimes, you know, I've watched Sprong, and when you're in part of you, you're like, well, he's so talented. You see the talent. It's like, how bad can the defensive side be? And then you watch me like, oh, it can be pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, he has some moments where you're like, it's not great, you know, and I hope he can work through, but you see some really obvious ones, and there's a reason why he didn't play for 11 minutes in the third.
Yeah.
He played just 10 minutes last night.
Yep.
You know, and like, he didn't get out there in overtime. Now, it wasn't the longest overtime, but There's a reason why. There were a lot of moments where he blew assignments and he was in the wrong spot, and you saw even him kind of swinging at pucks. The coach mentioned he hates guys swinging, and last night he didn't stop on pucks. The last shift I think he got in the third was one where the Canucks were on a forecheck. They're DeBrusk or Pettersson fighting along the walls, and he had a chance to get in there and get the puck, and he just swings at it, doesn't get it. They just transition and get it out of their own zone,
yeah.
And he didn't play after that.
Yeah.
He hates, and Tocchet hates those things.
Got to go through guys.
And those are the types of things he has to get better on. But then how lost he gets in his own zone, you see why coaches don't trust him. And yeah. That's what he has to overcome. So I wonder if that also, to your point, put DeBrusk in some situations where he wasn't sure what to do. But I thought offensively, there's a lot to like about DeBrusk, especially playing off Pettersson. Even Sprong, to be honest. Like, there's a lot of things to like about his offensive game and what he brings and what he can bring off the rush, too. Because of the speed the Canucks have now, they can just bank it off the wall, make a bank pass, and a guy can jump on it.
Yeah.
You saw that happen a few times, and it led to odd man rushes. So I like a lot of the offensive things, but defensively, that's where they have to make some improvements.
It's interesting when you think about Sprong, the goalie scores. Not a lot of guys in this league can score from distance like that, and he does it semi-regularly, right? And so to have that as a weapon on your team, huge. Big value, but there is a lot of Andre Kuzmenko in him with some of these defensive miscues that he's going to continue to have to work on. And I think it stood out most in the final preseason game against Edmonton, and Tocchet puts that line out there to help defend the lead, and Sprong gets, he's the low forward in the zone, so
yeah.
He's F3, if you would call it, and him taking what would be like sort of the normal centerman assignment, and it was just like lost,
yeah.
You know, like really struggled with it. And, sometimes you just got to take up the space rather than trying to close down a puck and trying to do too much. That can end up causing more problems,
yeah.
Because guess what? NHL players, they're going to find the space that you just vacated.
Oh, yeah, and you're overcommitting.
Yeah.
You can't do that, right? And we were also talking on the way in. It's so simple, but it's hard to execute when you get out there and the bullets are flying. You know, it's different, right? It's easy to say, but
yes.
You're out there. But it's like, just do less.
Yeah.
Just get to your landmark and occupy the space.
You really are like Kunu.
Yeah.
just do less.
Just do less. It's just so simple, but it's so hard to execute. That's why it's so hard to execute, right? The simple things. And to keep that cool under pressure and be able to process quickly is a real talent, right? And that's what separates a lot of these guys. But to your point and how you began, how this entire open, if you wanted to look at negatives to make you pessimistic and concerned, there are a lot there that you can point to. I saw a lot of positives as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, it's game one.
I'm not overreacting
about anything.
But I know how confirmation bias works.
Yeah.
And if you were going into and looking for these things last night, they all showed up in game one. And the Canucks are going to have to rectify some of these areas of their game going ahead. Because, like the Flyers, Torts team, they beat this Canucks team twice last year, mostly because they were outworking them.
Yeah,
it's their first game of the season. They're going to have their work boots on, so Canucks are going to have to be ready tomorrow night. All right, Canucks Central Roundup. Arsdeep Bains recalled from Abbotsford. Canucks currently holding 14 forwards and 7 defensemen, which is an interesting wrinkle. I mean, Tocchet has telegraphed this from basically the moment Arsdeep got sent down.
Yeah, he's been talking about how he'll most likely be back here soon. And Tocchet even mentioned the other day, and we spoke about it briefly yesterday, that he sees value in the guys, the young guys, Ratu and Baines, being on the road trip early on, even if they don't play a lot, just to kind of be part of the group. And then at some point, they have to play games, and they can't be here if they're not playing. But it seems like for camaraderie and bringing them along, he wants them here on the trip, at least part of the trip. My nerd side is like, just save the cap space. Why have both, right? But there's something greater at play here that Tocchet sees.
Yeah.
And it's a short-term thing. I don't think they're going to carry 14 forwards for a lot of the season. But we'll likely see Baines play. And it might be a little bit of a continuation of that tryout period we saw for the final preseason game. There's Oman in the mix. There's Ratu in the mix. There's Baines in the mix. Can one of these guys really grab a spot?
Yeah.
Especially when Suter and Joshua get healthy, or do you call up PDG down the road? So they might be still trying to figure out who's our best option here down the lineup.
All right, let's look at the practice lines from today's skate. Miller with Heinen and Besser, Pettersson with DeBrusk and Sprong, Ratu with Pugh Suter in the practice lineup on left wing. He could get in tomorrow night for his season debut. Connor Garland on right wing. Teddy Bluger with Nils Höglander bumped down to the quote-unquote fourth line alongside Kiefer Sherwood. Extras Nils Åman and Arsteep Baines.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about Höglander a little bit later on, but with the way that they rolled four lines last night, is it that much of a demotion if Tockett plans on rolling four lines? Maybe it's more of a fit thing than anything else. We'll see how it plays out moving forward. Hughes, Hronek, Susie, Myers, Forbert, and Juulsen with Desharnais running as the extra defenseman in the skate today. Also, Lankinen was the first goalie off the ice. Now, it was just a practice, not a morning skate, so that doesn't telegraph that he is starting tomorrow, but Artur Shilovs did put in extra work at the skate this afternoon. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Landon Ferraro's thoughts on last night's game, where it went wrong for the Vancouver Canucks, as our Canucks analyst joins us next on Canucks Central.